very popular thought. I'm actually from NYU, not from Toronto. I just come here fairly often. About the title, so I first gave a talk about this a year ago at Caltech, at something Barry Simon organized, and he made a comment, which was that the younger you are, the larger the title. So I'm a year older, so I got rid of the word the. It's now just probability distribution. Okay, so I'm going to be speaking about a series of works which have been going on the past few years, which have really gone in two directions. One is universality of a variety of different types of models, particularly polymer models, but also growth models, interacting particle systems, and then certain continuum stochastic PDEs. And then the second part, which is actually the main part I want to get to, is about the actual statistics of this universality class, of these continuum objects. So let me just jump in and give you the main object I'll be speaking about. There are different ways of introducing this, but let me just write it down. This is the free energy of the continuum-directed random polymer, and which I'll write continuum-directed random polymer. And it's just defined, well, you'll see it's actually a little complicated to define it. So it'll be the logarithm of a partition function, and the partition function is given as an expectation over Brownian bridges, which go from 0 at time 0 and at time t, or at position x, of the following quantity. So it should be exponential. We'll need a little interpretation of this, of minus the path integral of the Brownian motion through, or the Brownian bridge through a space-time white noise. Okay. Now, of course, there's a problem here. Space-time white noise is a very degenerate object. It's a distribution. It's not a function. So to define a path integral through such an object, one requires a little bit of finesse. And so to represent the finesse, I'll put two dots here. Okay? And I'll explain to you over the course of the next few minutes what these two dots really mean in terms of a few different approaches. Now, this is a model for, it's a continuum model for a directed polymer in a random environment, the random environment being a space-time white noise, and the underlying measure being a Brownian bridge. It's a point-to-point polymer. And we're going to restrict ourselves to 1 plus 1 spatial dimension. Let me give you just a picture of what such a thing, an illustration, of, for instance, of what such a thing looks like. This is, I'll think of as the direction of time. Okay, and here's some time t. So I start a Brownian bridge, and I integrate, so this is time t position x, I integrate through a space-time white noise along this path, and then I sum over all the paths. This is kind of a rough idea of what's going on. Okay? Now, the way that I'll make sense of this free energy to you is in five different ways. So the first you can take as a definition, and the other ways will be equivalent. So the first is as a Wiener-Itô chaos series. Okay. This will be a way of interpreting this exponential in terms of a time ordering of multiple stochastic integrals. The second will be in terms of stochastic PDEs. Now, it's not clear immediately, but this free energy actually satisfies a very important stochastic PDE. And if you got rid of the logarithm, then, well, this expectation also satisfies an important stochastic PDE. You can see a hint at this because this is really just a Feynman-Katz formula for some sort of white noise potential. Okay, so I'll explain that. The third approach will be to actually make sense of this directly by smoothing the white noise. And there are different ways of smoothing it. And the first one I'll take is a spatial smoothing of W. The fourth and the fifth approaches, however, are going to be the most important because these will bring it back to a concrete basis. All of this is very much in the continuum. The fourth approach is a space-time discretization of this problem, which many people are familiar with. It'll be a discrete, fully discrete, directed point-to-point polymer. And we've seen a lot of people speak about these sorts of objects. And the fifth is perhaps a little surprising, but we can actually also give approximation schemes for this free energy in terms of growth models or interacting particle systems. So the first part of my talk, I'll explain how these things work, and in the second part, I'll show you that you can actually compute the exact probability distribution of this continuum object using the solvability of certain of these approximation schemes. Okay. So let's just jump into the chaos series. I'm just going to write on the top here. I'm not going to go down because I know people can't see. So what is a chaos series? Well, if you, forgetting about the logarithm, so let's say, let's look at the exponential of this free energy, which should just be a partition function. We're going to define this as the following. Well, the reason why that exponential doesn't make sense, well, you could try to Taylor expand the exponential. Then you would get these iterated integrals with respect to white noise. The problem is that if you take an iterated integral of white noise and you evaluate two white noises at the same position, you run into a problem. It's like multiplying a distribution by itself. So what you do is you actually time order these integrals so as to avoid any sort of diagonal element. Okay, so the following can be taken as a definition of the exponential of this free energy. It will be, so you take the sum n equals 0 to infinity. This is just what you get by Taylor expanding the exponential. And then minus 1 to the n. And then you need to time order, which means that you look at times which are all the way up to t, the t1 through tn ordered, and then again an integral over rn. Now, when you take that expectation of the Brownian bridge inside after you've Taylor expanded, of course you're going to get transition probabilities for a Brownian bridge, the probability that you reach different points in your white noise. So we have some probability for the Brownian bridge that goes from 0, 0 to tx to go through the point, so at times t1 through tn to go through the points x1 through xn. And then we have our iterated integral. So this is w dt1 dx1 all the way up to w dtn dxn. This is just a Wiener-Itô integral, multiple stochastic integral. This is an object which you can check now because we've avoided the diagonal. This is convergent in L2 of white noise. So this defines this is a well-defined object in the L2 space of white noise. Okay? And this is what we'll take as our starting point. This is what we'll define this to be. Okay? Now, it turns out that turning to the second, this stochastic PDEs. Turns out that this is related to stochastic PDEs via a nice approximation scheme. So if we look at, we define the ZTX, let's define that as the heat kernel times this exponential STX. The point of putting in this heat kernel is that there we were looking at Brownian bridges. It's more natural to look at Brownian motion, so you need to kind of put back in the term that you took out to go from Brownian bridge to Brownian motion. Then you see that this Z, which can then just be interpreted in terms of this chaos series, satisfies a very simple recursion, which is that ZTX is equal to PTX minus integral 0 to t, integral r, of pt minus s, so p being the heat kernel again, x minus y, and then zs, y, and this is ds dy. So if you took this, so this, of course, you're feeding back a solution to this you're feeding z back into this, and if you just took z to be 1 at this point, you would get the first term of this chaos series. If you keep iterating this recursive definition, you'll get further and further terms of this chaos series. Okay? And what I've written down here is nothing but the mild form or the integrated form of the stochastic heat equation with multiplicative noise. So z actually satisfies, z satisfies the stochastic heat equation with multiplicative noise. multiplicative white noise, space-time white noise, which can be written in differential form as 1/2 the Laplacian y to z minus z times w. Yep. Well, so here we're looking, we're actually thinking about the initial data as being the final point. So if you want to understand, so this z I've specified, this is a well-posed stochastic PD. I need to tell you what the initial data is. But if you look at this definition that I gave, of course, when t is equal to 0, this term will just be 1, okay? Which means that here, when t is equal to 0, you're just getting the heat kernel at 0. And the heat kernel at 0 is a delta function at 0. Okay, so this is with initial data that z at time 0, position x, is a delta function. So what we see is that, in fact, the free energy of the continuum directum polymer, defined in this way, is nothing but, up to a factor of the heat kernel, the solution is a stochastic heat equation. It's delta function initial data. Okay. Now, this isn't that surprising, because, well, if this were replaced by some deterministic function, this would just be a Feynman-Katz formula. You know, if w dot were something nicer, it would be a Feynman-Katz formula, and this is just the correct way of interpreting the Feynman-Katz formula. Okay. Now, this stochastic heat equation of multiplicative noise is related to two other important stochastic PDEs. The first is the Kadar Perezi Zhang KPZ equation. And what you do there is we're going to define HTX to be equal to minus the logarithm of Z. So essentially, you know, up to a factor of the logarithm of the heat kernel, this and a minus sign, H is the same as F. Okay? Then you can observe that H satisfies the following stochastic PDE. So it's 1/2, again, the Laplacian, minus 1/2 the gradient squared plus white noise. Okay. This, of course, writing this down is a little controversial. This doesn't make that much sense written down, because you expect that H should have roughly Brownian, in space it should look roughly Brownian, so this nonlinearity doesn't really make sense. So in fact, what you do is you define that to solve the KPZ equation, we mean to solve the stochastic heat equation with the correct initial data and then take minus the logarithm. And this is what's called the Hopf whole solution to KPZ. This is what we define. Taking minus the logarithm of z is what is defined as the Hopf-Cole solution to the KPZ equation. This is it's a unique object because the stochastic heat equation is the solution is unique. Okay? I want to make clear. So this is a different concept than the energy solution, since Milton talked about. There is a way to see that a Hopf-Cole solution is an energy solution, but at present, as Milton said, we don't know whether this characterization of energy solutions provides a unique characterization of what it means to solve the KPZ equation. So from the perspective of this whole story of polymers, the relevant definition is this one, minus logarithm of z. Now, you could also, if you then differentiate H in space, then actually this solves another stochastic PDE, which is called the stochastic Burgers equation. I'm not going to write that down. But one should understand that this KPZ equation actually it arose in a slightly different context than this free energy. It arose when Kadar, Perezi, Zhang, they were studying continuum versions of growth models. They were interested in discrete growth models, but they couldn't really say much about them. So they said, let's come up with a continuum growth model, which has the characteristics of the discrete growth models we're looking at. And what they noticed is that, well, the characteristics that were pertinent were threefold. The first was that there would be a smoothing term. There would be some sort of smoothing of your growth surface. And here that's represented by a Laplacian. The second characteristic that they wanted was they wanted a slope dependence of the growth rate subject to a rotational symmetry. Growth off of something like this and growth off of something like this should be symmetric. The growth rate shouldn't depend on the orientation. So that's where up to Taylor approximation this comes in. So this is slope dependence. And then you should have randomness. So they just wrote this equation down and said this should be the limiting object. You know, there's no real mathematical derivation. But it turns out that, as we'll see, and this will come up in the fifth area, that this actually is a continuum limit of growth models. But it's actually very hard to prove for in any generality that this is true. Okay. Now, the third, so I'll come back to these equations later, but let me continue on with these definitions. So the third way of making sense of this free energy is in terms of a spatial smoothing of the space-time white noise. So this is an approach taken by Bertini and Cancrini. This is spatial smoothing. And the names here are Bertini and Cancrini. And the idea here is that you introduce an approximate delta function, which has support given by some length scale kappa. Okay, so a very small delta function, approximate version of a delta function. And all you do is you smooth out the white noise in space. So we define this, well, you need to define this in a weak way since it's still not a function of time. But this is given by taking the delta function and looking at x minus y, y minus x, this is x minus y. Okay. So you just smooth it in space by a factor of this delta function. Okay. And now you can write down an approximate version of this free energy formula. So you look at, let's forget the logarithm, we look at the exponential, again, of the Brownian bridge. And now you can really just define this exponential because you've now created a smooth field in space, you can take an integral of a Brownian bridge through this smoothed out version. Okay. So now you have minus the smooth version of the space-time white noise. But in order to make this work, the problem is that there is a strong covariance of the white noise along the path. So if you think of this as an exponential martingale, you're missing a term. You're missing the term that you get by looking at the covariance of this part of the exponential. And what is the covariance of the integral from 0 to t of this smoothed out version of white noise? Well, it's just the integral, so it's minus a half, the integral from 0 to t of the covariance of the space-time white noise with itself. But since you've smoothed it out by this delta function, this tells you exactly what the covariance is. It's just given by the spatial convolution of this smoothed out delta function evaluated at 0. This is a self-energy term. Since the delta function is getting very extreme, you're picking up a very small amount of the white noise, and then you're looking at the covariance of that white noise with itself, and this is blowing up. So in order to make this exponential not blow up, you need to take into account the martingale term. And so if you subtract this term, which, well, doesn't depend on t, so you can just write it as t over 2, then what Bertini and Cancrini show is that if you take this limit as kappa goes to 0, then this up to the factor up to this p factor, this solves the stochastic heat equation. Okay. So this gives you another interpretation for what these double dots around the exponential really mean. It means that you smooth out in space, and then you take the smoothing to 0 while compensating for the fact that you need to subtract a self-energy term. or the Wick exponential term, or the Gerstenhof exponential term. Okay. Now, so this is the third. Okay. So now we're going to move into much more concrete objects, okay, which are the discrete-directed. Directed point-to-point polymer. Okay. Now, if you got lost with any of the continuum stuff here, this is a very simple model that we've seen a few times before. What it is that you look at random walks, and I'm going to draw them in the same sort of orientation as I drew there before, that this is my time direction, and this is space. And I'm looking at random walks which are given in terms of our reference measure, which is just a simple symmetric random walk. Okay, so you can go to the left or to the right with each time step by one. So, for instance, you could have something like this. Okay, this could be a given random walk. And the point is that we're looking up to time n and to some position y. Now, the way that we assign the probability of a given walk is in terms of, again, a Gibbs factor of this sort. We want to discretize exactly. So what we do is we consider, this is a capital pi, which is the set of all paths from 0, 0 to position y at time n. And so this is little pi from 0, 0 to ny. And on this, we define the following probability distribution. So this is P. It's with respect to an inverse temperature and with respect to an endpoint. And what you do is on pi, ny, the probability of a given path pi, little pi, is given in terms of a normalizing constant, which is simply known as the partition function, times a Gibbs factor. And the Gibbs factor is beta times of pi. T of pi should be thought of as minus an energy. And T of pi is defined in the following way. What you do is you define at every vertex of this lattice, you define a random variable, wij. These are iid random variables. And then T of pi for a given path pi is just defined as the sum along vertices that you go through in the path pi of these wijs. You should think about it for a moment. This is entirely analogous to this path integral through a white noise field of a Brownian bridge. Here you're taking a discrete integral of through a discrete white noise field of a random walk. Okay? And you're assigning a factor like this. So what is z? Z is just this very typical normalization factor, where you sum over all paths in your path space. These factors. Okay. Now, one should note that, in fact, using these partition functions, you can actually recover the probability distribution in a very simple way. What you do is, if you want to know the probability that a path from 0, 0 to ny goes through a particular point at time m, you actually just look at a partition function from this point to this point. Let's say we want to know whether you go through this point. Partition function from this point times the partition function from this point divided by the whole partition function. So this gives you a way of recovering the probability from understanding these partition functions. And in fact, the same applies in the continuum setting. And this is a work that's in progress of Albert Skahanen and Castell, is that they're able to describe in the continuum setting by using this prescription of taking products of the solution of the stochastic heat equation or the partition function for this continuum polymer, they're able to describe an actual path for which this is this continuum directed random polymer free energy is the free energy. It's a path measure that this is the free energy for. So I'm not going to go much more into that. Now, this partition function, I want to connect it for you to this the partition function of the continuum directed random polymer. So in order to do that, let me first normalize it by dividing through by the total number of paths from 0, 0 to anywhere at time n. So I'll take z tilde beta to just be 1 over 2 to the n times zb and y. And this is a nice normalization. And then you can observe that z satisfies this very simple recursion, which is that z tilde beta and y. Well, you know, if you're looking at this point, the partition function here just depends on its two previous neighbors. And it depends in this following way. It's 1 half of the z tilde beta at n minus 1 at position y minus 1, and the same thing at position y plus 1. And then you should have this exponential factor given in terms of the weight at the end point, ny. Now, it's convenient, actually, to think of, to realize that this exponential, it's the exponential of a sum. You might as well write it as a product of, you know, you might as well write this term as a product over I and j in my path pi of 1 plus a w tilde ij. W tilde and these w's, the distributions are, of course, related. But the point is that for beta small, so when beta is near 0, w tilde ij is like beta times wij. This is just something that you see from Taylor expanding the exponential in beta. Okay? So this factor can actually be written as 1 plus if w tilde ij, okay, in the same way. And now you see that this recursion, which is very trivially satisfied by the partition function, is actually a version of a discrete version of the stochastic heat equation. It's saying that the partition function at this time can be written in terms of its two previous times, and then there's a noise term. Okay? And this really is a discretized version of the stochastic heat equation. So what it suggests is that there should be a way of taking a limit of this this partition function to converge to the stochastic heat equation. Now, if we want to take a limit of a discrete stochastic heat equation, well, we first need to know how the scaling is. And if you're taking a limit of a heat equation, a discrete heat equation, you need to use diffusive scaling in order to converge to the continuum heat equation. So this suggests that we should look at n, which is like epsilon to the minus 4. I'm just going to introduce a parameter epsilon. So n, we're looking at a time scale, which is like epsilon to the minus 4 times t. We'll look at a spatial scale, which is epsilon to the minus 2 times capital X. So we're going to look at a very, very long time, and we'll just scale diffusively. And under this diffusive scaling, the random walk paths will just converge to Brownian bridges. Okay. Now, we need to also compensate for the fact that doing this scaling of time and space is going to cause the noise to get very, very large, okay? Because we're kind of compressing everything down. Unless we compensate by weakening the noise will go out of control. So what you need to do is you need to simultaneously take beta going to 0. And we'll take beta going to 0 like epsilon times alpha. Okay? Now, Alberts, Kahanen, and Castell, they observed that under these scalings, you have the following result. So this is a work in progress that they're finishing. So if you take these scalings, and you take epsilon to 0, so this, I'll say AKQ, then this converges to the solution to the stochastic heat equation. Well, you need to take into account the alpha, so it's alpha to the 4t alpha squared x, where z at time 0 is given by a delta function. So it's nothing other than under these weak scalings of noise, it's nothing but this continuum-directed random polymer. Okay? So it's only when you scale beta to 0 in this critical way that you're able to converge to this continuum polymer. Okay? Now, I'll say one word about how this is proved. They don't directly go through this proving a discrete stochastic heat equation converges to continuum. They actually do a very clever thing, which is they expand this recursion in powers of beta. So they get a series in beta. Now, when you're taking beta in this critical way, you can show that the terms in the series don't blow up. And in fact, the terms in the series converge to these terms. And so then what they need to use is a theory about convergence of discrete iterated integrals to continuum iterated integrals. And this is built off of the idea of U statistics. And so they build on these ideas of U statistics to prove this result. But it's a very nice result because I haven't emphasized this yet, but it doesn't really depend on the WIJs. Okay? There are certain moments, you need the first so many moments to be finite, and that's actually, it matters that the first so many moments are finite. But then up to that, this is really a universality result. Okay? And as far as the specifics of what these conditions are, I'll leave it to you guys to ask them, because I don't want to, Okay, so... Now, we've seen that these polymer models also have a very interesting... Here we're dealing with a very, very high temperature limit. Beta going to zero, beta is the inverse temperature. On the other hand, when you look at the very, very low temperature regime, for instance, temperature zero, these models also become very tractable. So this is what's called last passage percolation. So if you take beta equals infinity and you look at the free energy, well, you need to be a little careful when you take beta to infinity. What it does is it picks out the largest path. It focuses entirely on the largest value of T of pi. Okay? So if we look at log z beta ny divided by beta, and we take beta to infinity, then this will converge to a random variable lny, which is known as the last passage time. And this is a model called last passage percolation. The recursion, which I wrote up there, which you notice is written in terms of addition and multiplication, actually becomes a very simple recursion in terms of a different algebra, which is max and plus. And so the recursion is that Ly is equal to the maximum of L n minus 1, y minus 1, n minus 1, y plus 1, plus the Wij. So all it's saying is that, the last passage time is recording the time it takes for you to get to a particular point, taking the slowest path. And, the time it takes for you to get to yn is going to be the maximum of the two slowest paths that you could go through. So, you could go to the left or the right down, plus the time it takes for you to actually get there. Now, because of this interpretation, this is actually equivalent to a very nice growth model. Yep. Oh, yeah, n and y. So this is equivalent to a very, very nice growth model, which we've seen before. This is called the corner growth model. So the corner growth model is defined as, here I'm going to speak about the corner growth model in a very particular geometry, which is a wedge geometry. Okay? And what you do is you think about you have a process by which any time that you have a local minimum, for instance, there's a local minimum right here, you can fill it in at rate 1 and turn it into a local maximum. So you can kind of fill it in with a box. Okay. Now, so after some random time, we fill this box in. And then we keep this process going. We fill this box in. Maybe we fill this. And all of this is occurring continuous in time. So it's a continuous time Markov process. We do this at exponential rate 1. Now, if we took these Wijs in this above example to be exponential random variables, so exponential with rate 1 random variables, then this last passage time actually records a statistic about this growth model. What it records is it records the last time that a box, or it records basically the time it takes for a given box to be absorbed into this growth front. Just observe the following. How long does it take this box to get absorbed? Well, these two boxes needed to be absorbed first. So it's the max of its two previous guys, plus the time that this takes to be grown. But this is an exponential random variable, the time it takes. So that's just this. So in fact, there's an exact coupling between last passage percolation and this corner growth model. Okay. So here we can continue to grow. So we have this. Now this is a very particular case of the corner growth model. The corner growth model, you can also introduce death. So not only will you grow, but you can also lose particles. And now the connection becomes, it separates. No longer will it be exactly equivalent to a polymer model. But what we can do is we can allow growth to occur at rate Q, and simultaneously we can allow death to occur at rate P. So this, what was there, goes down and becomes a local minimum. So in a little instant dt, this could be removed, this could be removed, or these could be grown, and each one with an independent probability of a very small proportional to dt. So now this is no longer equivalent to this, but this is called, so the I'll keep track of this asymmetry between Q and P. So we'll take Q plus P equals 1, and then Q minus P is gamma. And gamma I'll take between 0 and 1. And what gamma represents is the asymmetry of the model. If gamma is equal to 1, then you only have growth. And if gamma is equal to 0, then you have a symmetry between growth and death. So this model, this corner growth model, is also equivalent to a particle system, simply by taking the derivative of the slope. So every time, let's say initially, this is empty, every time that there's an upslope, you put a particle beneath it. So we kind of have this lattice underneath there. You put a particle underneath. And every time that there's a downslope, you put a hole. And I think Timo said before that he hates when people put circles as holes, but I'm going to do it anyway. So you have particles and holes, and this is the growth rule now that you can kind of fill in boxes. This corresponds to the fact that particles try to jump left with rate Q, and simultaneously they try to jump right with rate P, but they only do so if they can. So this is they do it if they're not excluded. For instance, this particle can't jump because there's already something there. So this is called the asymmetric simple exclusion process. So we have the corner growth model, or the asymmetric simple exclusion process. And we see that for the case for gamma equals 1, this is equivalent to last passage percolation with exponential weights. So now let me state for you the first fluctuation theorem. And I'll state it in terms of this asymmetric exclusion process. What we do is we introduce a height function, h gamma px. And this height function, the gamma just represents the values of p and q, the asymmetry. And this height function just records at a given time t what the interface between the growth and the rest of the environment is. So, for instance, at t equals 0, this is just absolute value of x in this geometry, in the wedge geometry. You could start it in different geometries as well. Then we have the following result, and this is due to Johansson for the case of gamma equals 1, and then Tracy and Whittam for general positive gamma. And the gamma equals 1 case then translates into a last passage percolation fluctuation theory. What happens is, if you run this for time t, well, because of the asymmetry, you won't see as much if you have a smaller asymmetry. So actually, you want to to make things equal, you want to run it for time t over gamma. And then you need to subtract off, we're just going to look right above the origin for the moment. You need to subtract off a law of large numbers term. Okay? So if you look in the literature, you can find that there's a very nice theory for the limit shape of this growth process. It's given by a parabola. And if you look right above the origin, the law of large numbers is given by t over 2. And then it turns out that the fluctuations are not the usual central limit theorem fluctuations. They're actually much smaller. They're of the order t to the 1/3. And we have the following result, that the probability this is bigger than or equal to minus s is equal to something called the Tracy-Whittam GUE, or the Tracy-Whittam F2 distribution of 2 to the 1/3 s. And as t goes, that's important. This is limit as t goes to infinity of this probability. Now this FGUE, I'm not going to say much more about it, but it can be written as a Fredholm determinant of a certain kernel, the Airy 2 kernel, on an L2 space, which is actually determined by the content there. So it's L2, 2 to the 1/3 s to infinity. This is a nice formula. There's also a formula in terms of Panleweck 2. Now, the point of all of this is that this tells you something. It tells you that you're in what's called the KPZ universality class. KPZ universality class means that you have the following relation between time exponents, space fluctuation exponent, space exponents and fluctuation exponents. It's equal to 3 to 2 to 1. So here we've looked at a time scale of t. We actually haven't looked at any sort of spatial scale, but in the case of gamma equals 1, Prahoffer and Spohn show that if you look at two points which are separated by order t to the 2/3, you see a non-trivial correlation structure in terms of the Airy process. So this 3 to 2 to 1, 1 being the fluctuations of this. So it's t to the 3/3, 2/3, 1/3. And in addition to that, you know, more specifically, you have certain types of distribution functions that come up. For instance, the FGUE comes up. Okay? This is called the KPC universality class. On the other hand, so I might write this smaller. On the other hand, if you were to take gamma equals 0, so this is for all positive gamma. For gamma equals 0, clearly this can't work because you're going to divide by 0. And in fact, there's another theory that happens, and it tells you that if when gamma is equal to 0, you're in the symmetric case, there is a law of large numbers. It's on a smaller scale. It's on the scale of t to the 1/2. But around that, you have t to the 1/4 fluctuations, and you have a spatial correlation of t to the 1/2. So this is called the Edwards-Wilkinson universality class, and this corresponds to gamma equals 0. And there you have the same sort of except you have now a 4 to 2 to 1. But in particular, you have t to the 1/4 fluctuations is what I want to emphasize. And the statistics there are actually Gaussian, though the spatial correlation is non-trivial. So it's a non-trivial Gaussian process in space. Okay. So what I emphasize here is that we have, again, the same sort of behavior that we have. We have two universality classes. We have positive gamma and we have zero gamma, and they're sitting right next to each other, but they have different scaling exponents. So there's a mantra in statistical physics that when you have this sort of abutment of universality classes, you should look at the interface, and you should scale into the interface, and you should find something universal there. And it's going to turn out that we'll find exactly the same object at the interface. So let me just draw a little picture, and then I'm going to move on to the... Okay, so what's going on is that when you have ksat, which is gamma equals 1, and then this is related to LPP, last passage percolation, and then you can take a finite beta, so this is beta less than infinity but bigger than 0, and you can take a finite asymmetry, and then only when gamma is going to 0 and beta is going to 0 do they join up again in terms of this KPZ equation, or this free energy of the universality class. So there is, of course, a question as to what is the space-time process that you get by looking in this vicinity. And, well, Jeremy will talk about this, actually, at a special additional informal seminar tomorrow at 2 p.m. He'll talk about some results which we have about the space-time scaling process when you're not going to zero in the asymmetry. Okay. So I'll tell you a little bit more about that later, though. Now, okay. So I should tell you, so I've given you a fluctuation theory for positive asymmetry, but I want to tell you a little bit about what happens when gamma is equal to, gamma is going to zero, when you're in this weak asymmetry regime. So this is actually the fifth of these approximation results. This is the growth models or interacting particle system. And here we can say much less. We can only deal with one model, and it's this particular model. And so we have the following result. So this is, if we want to prove convergence to the KPZ equation of this height function, we actually, since we only know the KPZ equation in terms of the stochastic heat equation, we need to go through the stochastic heat equation and prove convergence. So what you need to do is actually define, let me tell you this. So we want to take, we'll look at a time scale which is given by this 3 to 2 to 1. So we take epsilon to the minus 3t, x will be like epsilon to the minus 2x, and then we'll take gamma, or we'll look at fluctuations which are like epsilon to the minus 1, and finally we'll take gamma going to 0 like epsilon. Okay. This is what I mean by taking a weakly asymmetric. This is looking between the universality class. So these will be my scalings, and then I want to define an object which will be a, which will converge to the continuum stochastic heat equation, Z epsilon Tx, and this it will be given in terms of a scaling coefficient, C epsilon exponential of, and then I'll, let's see, so then, let me show you the coefficients. Minus gamma epsilon. So it's exactly this the same thing. I haven't told you what these three things are, but essentially, I'm not going to tell you what they are, but essentially, this is like looking at the following object minus so we define it essentially, I'll tell you why I put these in. We define it essentially to just be the fluctuations that we were looking at over here. Okay? And we're going to look at exponential of minus that because that undoes the Hopf-Cole transform. Okay? And then there's actually a C epsilon, which is going to be important for us. So we have the following theorem. This is in the style of earlier results of Bertini and Jacquemin. However, their results don't apply in this case, but you know we build upon their results. So this is actually a result of ACQ, by which I mean Gideon Muir, myself, and Jeremy Crustell, which says that if you take C epsilon, like epsilon to the minus 1 over 2, then Z epsilon converges as a space-time process to the solution to the stochastic heat equation with delta function initial data. So the point of this C epsilon is that, in fact, because of the weird geometry, this wedge geometry, when we take time equals zero and you look at what this looks like, it just looks like epsilon, or it looks like expectation of minus epsilon to the minus 1 absolute value of x. You just plug in t equals zero and evaluate this. You get this. So if you want, when t goes to zero, this, of course, is a very nasty object as epsilon goes to zero, unless you put in this prefactor. If you put in this prefactor, then it's just an approximate delta function. So this converges to delta function x equals zero. Now, I'll tell you maybe, well, okay. Maybe I won't tell you too much about how one goes about proving this. Essentially, this, what you do is you use Bertini-Jacquemin's result, but it doesn't apply. Bertini-Jacquemin only applies very near equilibrium initial data, so not in a wedge when you're kind of very flat initial data. What you do is you run this, so we do a priori estimates that say that even if you start in a wedge, after a finite macroscopic amount of time, you'll be in the regime in which you can apply Bertini-Jacquemin. Then you take that finite time at which you started, and you bring it back to zero, and you show that the initial data matches. So it's a way of kind of building off of Bertini-Jacquemin, but actually it gives a general scheme to prove convergence results for which Bertini-Jacquemin don't apply. Bertini-Jacquemin require very specific estimates, which don't apply in a lot of cases. Okay, so now I think I'm ready to state the main theorem. So I've gone through and I've given you these five different characterizations or equivalent continuum objects. So some were approximation results, and others were actual definitions. And now I want to tell you that, in fact, we can give an exact formula for the probability distribution of this continuum object, and hence we can give you any of these objects that converge. We give you the statistics as well. So this is theorem. This is also Jeremy and myself. This is from a year ago, and it says that we're going to define FTS to be the probability distribution of this free energy plus, well, we'll just, there's a nice centering, T over 24, and then we give the following exact formula. So FTS can be written as a contour integral along a certain contour that avoids the positive real axis, du over u, e to the minus u, and then a Fredholm determinant, which acts on a certain LT space. A to infinity. And A is just, A is essentially S. It's just S minus log square root 2 pi t. Now, since I don't have too much time, I'm not going to tell you exactly what this kernel is. It's a very simple object. It's essentially the same thing if you're familiar with the Airy kernel. It's very similar to the operator that you get for the, in the Airy kernel. It's just a rather than projecting onto the positive or projecting onto the negative eigenvalues of the Airy operator, you're doing a kind of a smoothing of this operation. Now, what is the point? The point is that we now have an exact formula for this continuum object. And from this, we can take some nice corollaries. Let me state a few corollaries and then reflect on this for a moment. So one corollary is that if you take t to infinity and you look in the t to the 1/3 scale, then this converges to the Tracy-Widom GUE redistribution. What does this mean? Well, what it means is taking t to infinity is like moving back towards this KPZ universality class. I could have, when I stated that theorem, I could have put a scaling into the gamma, this asymmetry. So I could be then, after the fact, scale the asymmetry back up. Scaling the asymmetry back up is like taking t to infinity. And what this says is that when I move back towards the KPZ universality class, I need to scale by t to the 1/3, and I get back the exact probability distribution for that KPZ universality class. So there's a very smooth interpolation in that direction. On the other hand, if I take t to 0, and I look in the t to the 1/4 scale, then I get back a Gaussian. So you see that there's an exact interpolation between these two universality classes. And what this is really telling you is that this thing sits right in the middle, and it really fills up the whole space. Okay. Another thing to notice is this t over 24. Actually, if you remember back, this t and alpha to the 4 play a similar role. So this fourth power shows up if you kind of think about a scaling of the free end of the of beta in terms of this polymer. This is like really a free energy to the fourth power, and this is in line with work that that Hubert Lequant did about the way that the free energy disappears at zero for these polymer models. Okay, so before I go on, let me give a few reflections. The first is that this theorem was proved by the three of us. However, this formula, it was simultaneously and independently derived by Tomohiro Sasamoto and Herbert Spahn. They didn't attempt a rigorous proof, so you know our rigorous proof came out basically the same time as their derivation. They use a very similar approach as we do. However, as maybe I'll tell you in a word, the actual proof is very involved. First of all, you need to prove this convergence result, which I said here, and then the second thing is that you actually need a way to access the solvability of these models. You know, here I'm talking about this continuum-directed Baryon polymer. Why is it that we can calculate something? The reason we can calculate something is because of the fact that this asymmetric exclusion, or the weakly asymmetric when you're taking gamma to zero, is solvable in a certain specific sense that Tracy-Widom, they were able to give exact probability formulas for the one-point distribution of this asymmetric exclusion process. So the probability that the height function at a given time was bigger than a given value. And then what's necessary in order to derive this formula is to take a scaling limit in the correct scalings. There are lots of scalings involved. To take a scaling limit of these Tracy-Widom formulas that they derive. At a heuristic level, it's relatively easy to guess what the formula is by doing the scaling. It turns out that because of the critical scaling, you involve a very important technical issue having to do with the steepest descent contours. You're bound to have steepest descent contours when you're doing these formulas, which stay within an epsilon of each other because of the scaling. However, you want a given function to be going to infinity on one of them and minus infinity on the other. So you have two contours that stay right next to each other, but should have different asymptotic values. And it's not clear at all whether this can be done, and there's a lot of work in actually proving this. Just one other reflection is that this is actually the first example of a nonlinear stochastic PDE which has been solved in an exact sense. Okay? So I'm not going to have time to give you the Tracy-Witten formula, and you're lucky because it's a very large formula, but it plays a very important role in all of this, and one shouldn't forget that. There are, in this last bit, there are two other approaches to deriving this formula which have come up in the last year. One approach is very non-rigorous. It's an approach that is taken by two groups of physicists, Dostenko and Klumov, and Calabresi, Lidusal, and Rosso. And what it does is it looks directly at the level of the stochastic heat equation. And it uses the fact that you can write moments of the stochastic heat equation in terms of solutions to a certain quantum problem called the Lieb-Leininger Hamiltonian, in terms of something called the Lieb-Leininger Hamiltonian. Okay, so you write this in terms of a quantum problem, and then there's a method in quantum, these sorts of problems called beta ansatz, which allows you to actually solve for these moments. And then in order to recover the moments, so you have the moments and you'd like to recover a probability distribution. Of course, you can't do this because the moments grow too large. So, you know, a mathematician would say, oh, we're done. Physicists, of course, have their tricks and they black magic. They make a valiant attempt at deriving this formula. They actually did this a month before we did, and they got it wrong, because you need to resum lots of divergent series, and it's very complicated. Once our formulas came out, they were, oh, we got it too. The other approach, which is really being developed now, goes back to the stuff that Neil was talking about on Monday, and this is the solvability of the polymer models themselves. Here we've gone through the exclusion process. Polymer models are actually nicer because, of course, the convergence results are easier. Actually, everything's easier. And what Neil talked about was an example of exact solvability of a polymer model. It turns out that in this polymer model I was talking about here, there's also exact solvability. So Nikos Georgiou spoke about this log gamma distribution, which Timo had given the t to the one third distribution, where it turns out that this is a solvable model. And actually, we're in the process right now of coming up with the exact probability distributions in this case. Now, it turns out that these polymers, the algebra, everything is much easier in the polymers. You know, it's surprising that everything was done through exclusion process first. Everything's easier, and my hope is that we'll actually be able to say a lot more than just the one-point distribution. Because at this point, we can only give the one-point probability distribution. There are a number of questions that we would like to answer, so let me highlight three of them. The first is, I've been speaking entirely about point-to-point polymers, or equivalently delta function initial data, or growth in a wedge. Of course, you're interested also in line-to-point, or point-to-line, or in studying polymers where there's perhaps an initial potential that determines where you leave. And it turns out that there are a few very distinguished types of initial data. For instance, starting the stochastic heat equation with one as the initial data, this corresponds to line-to-point polymers. Or E to a Brownian motion corresponds to an equilibrium problem for growth models. And for these types of distributions, we'd also like to determine the exact formulas for the statistics. Another direction, aside from this kind of other initial datas, is to understand the multipoint statistics. I mentioned Prachhofer and Spahn in the case of gamma equals 1, you can give, and various other people, you can give at a given time the spatial process. We'd like to determine in this crossover regime, in this regime of at the interface of these universality classes, what these continuum or what these crossover versions of the spatial processes are. Okay? And the third thing, just to close, is what Jeremy will talk about on tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m., which is we know in the weak asymmetry, when gamma and beta are going to zero, we know what the space-time process is. However, when gamma or beta are positive, we don't know what the space-time process is. You know, we know what the spatial process is, but how does it evolve in time? Okay. And actually, at the level of physics, Jeremy and I have a proposal, or we've solved, or I don't know exactly how to phrase it. we have a physics proof of what it should be, okay, and able to actually calculate certain things about this. So Jeremy will talk about this this tomorrow. So let me just close by saying, you know, we're really at the beginning of all of this stuff. You know, you should think of this analogous to the story of Brownian motion. You know, so De Moivre looked at plus or minus one random walk, simple symmetric random walk. That's a solvable model, and he was able, using, you know, asymptotics, a binomial coefficient, to give the probability distribution, the Gaussian. Okay? And since then, it went in two directions. One is universality, proving that all random walks are the same in the limit, and the other is solvability, which is proving that there are all these techniques to calculating distributions and different types of Gaussian processes. We're in a different setting here, and we've just started, and we've just gone and used these solvable models, and hopefully we'll develop other more robust techniques which can really extend us beyond this, and hopefully we'll also find ways to extend the universality of these statistics in this class. So thank you very much.